Hello, this is Chuck from Above the Basement, Boston Music and Conversation. When we first began this podcast and started putting together names of people we would like as guests, Billy Beard was on the primary list, not necessarily because we had heard him play, but because we had seen him playing with everyone. Forget the fact that he books for the great Cambridge music mainstays like Toad and the Lizard Lounge. And even putting aside the fact that he would not book me at Toad, and no, Billy, I do not hold a grudge. He was just one of those people who appeared on drums for so many musicians in Boston. Billy got his start in Boston with the pop band Face to Face, and not to date ourselves, but we totally remember their hit song and video, 1098. He has worked over the years with Patty Griffin, Melissa Ferrick, Chris Delmhorst, the late Mark Sandman from the great Boston band Morphine, Rose Cousins, Laurie McKenna, and Kim Ritchie, to name just a few. I caught him last night at the Lizard Lounge playing with some of the same wonderful singer-songwriters with Sub Rosetta, a smaller version of the Sub Rosa collaboration with some of Boston's great musicians. We just posted a video excerpt from the show last night on our Facebook page, so be sure to check it out. They will be at the Lizard Lounge every third Wednesday. Among other projects, Billy is part of the award-winning band Session Americana and has toured extensively in the US and Europe, and is another example of how he continues to draw amazing musicians together. It is appropriate that Billy won a Boston Music Award for Unsung Hero in 2008 in celebration of his hard work and commitment to the Boston music scene. Our friend and drummer Jonathan Beakley joins me this time around as co-host. So here is our conversation with Billy Beard, recorded at Woods Hill Table in Boston, Massachusetts. Jonathan's a drummer.
I'm an amateur drummer.
Well, who do you take lessons from? From Devo Band?
So there's a fellow by the name of Adam Clark, and he was in a band called the Superpowers, and he was in Devo Band, a few other things. And so I'm still taking lessons. Only
that's 20 good.
Or 20 or 30 more years.
And yeah, I should be, but I'm not.
Billy, I'm so glad to finally have you on. So here's my story. So I moved. I'm from Concord. I grew up in Concord, and I lived in New York for like 25 years,
and then in the city.
I live in the city, then out in Brooklyn, and then out in Jersey, as one does. That's what everyone seems to do. Yeah. So I finally moved back up here, and I had a band down in New Jersey. And when I moved up here, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to do my solo thing. So one of the first places I emailed was Toad, and I never heard back, which is fine. I get it.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. I get it. Trust me, I get it. I'm on that side too. Like, people want to come on the podcast, and it's like I can only have so many people come on, and I have to have different kinds of people, and so I get it. But you've been on our list to have on the show since we started it. The short 20-person list of like people I could just remember off the top of my head who would want to have on the show.
Yeah.
And 3 years later, almost 3 years later, it'll be 3 years and 3 years actually this month. We finally got you on.
I know. And it was not an easy task.
Well, sometimes it's not.
Snowstorms and
sometimes
whatever.
Sometimes it's not. It's just life. It gets in the way. Yeah. But thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it.
You're more than welcome. My pleasure.
So you are in a band now called Session Americana, right?
I am.
And did it get its start at Toad? Is
it
that right?
It did. That band has sort of taken precedent these days over the last maybe like 10 years. It's really the sort of main thing. And that was just a weird, happy coincidence. I was playing in a band with Rye Kavanaugh and Jennifer Kimball called Maybe Baby. And it was a three-act night. We were in the middle, and the last act never showed up. And we'd completely broken down. And we were just literally sitting at the table in front of the stage waiting. And Rye kind of looked at me and he goes, you know what? I got an idea. And he jumps up, pulls 358s off the mic stands and duct tapes them to the tabletop. And he's like, take some brushes and like play on the wall. And we just sang and played everything we knew, ranged from Merle Haggard to Prince songs to whatever. No exaggeration, within like 10 or 15 minutes, the entire room, which was packed, was transformed into this like intimate, unbelievable musical moment. I remember looking towards the street and all the people that were sitting on bar stools had gotten up and sat on the bar. So it was like this draped sort of thing as it went out to the street.
Yeah.
And it was just incredible. And he and I were neighbors at that point, and we were driving home that night, and he said, we should do form a band around that idea.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Yeah.
You've retained that style because I watched a video of a recent concert, and everyone is perched around a single microphone.
Yes, absolutely.
And not only that, your drums are flat. They're not like this.
They're flat and they're backwards. But when we originally had the band, we wanted to keep it with one microphone right in the middle of the table. We now have lots of mics that we carry all over the place. But the only way the rhythm section could get in vocally would be to ease in from the side.
Yeah.
So that necessitated a drum set that would allow me to do that. So the kick drum is a suitcase. It's an old 1940s suitcase, which sort of back then you could sort of tuck under the table. And I started playing with a second snare, which is much lower and deeper, that I can flip on and off. It doubles as a tom, but it's to my left instead of my right. I'm right-handed.
Okay.
So a lot of the patterns, a lot of the fills will be offbeats to the left-hand side. Since then, we've kind of moved back and we're up on risers or whatever the stage may be. It's sort of the necessity is the mother of invention. We just kind of started that way, and we've kept the table ever since.
You started doing it at Toad, correct?
Right.
And now you do it mostly at Lizard? Or is it kind of mixed it up?
It's a pretty huge range.
Okay.
Because
Lizard is very complimentary to that.
Yes.
Because everyone's right there on the same level as you. Not that Toad...
I think the Toad experiment, we were there for 2 years on Sunday nights. Ryan and I both had little kids born, I don't know, 6 or 8 months apart. And it was a way to get out of the house on Sunday nights. And it was like we would go play. And it just became a super popular hang. And it got to the point where we couldn't hear ourselves anymore. It was just everybody was packed in there.
So was it a fixed group or was it more of like a collective?
In the beginning, it was a fixed group, but we were playing a lot of covers. And there were really strong songwriters in the band.
Yeah.
So we weren't entertaining original music. That seemed to be relegated to those people's other projects. Mm. But then we kind of opened that door, and then it really kind of solidified as a band and became more original in content.
Oh, okay.
And it lasted like that for a long time. And it's gone back and forth. There's sort of a core group. It's always been 6 or 7 people. So the core group is the same four of us. And then the other two kind of move in and out. It's been a collective at times. It's been a band at times. It's kind of edging back more towards the collective now. And we always found that with 6 of us singing, it just sounded better without monitors, without like those heads in the same space sound so good.
It's like a little Irish.
Originally was we were sort of doing Americana music, but it was like an Irish session.
Yeah.
Right. So that's where we came up
with. Yeah, so it was a description, right? It was a description of what you were doing and it became the name of the band. Right?
Kind of by default. Yeah. Kind of we regretted it later, but it got too far ahead to change it. So
I've heard worse.
I'm in a band called 7 of 7, and it's because if we get all 7 people in the room at the same time, 7 of 7, and there it goes, right?
To answer your question earlier about the Lizard, it certainly has become home base for us.
Yeah.
But we've done long runs at Oberon, which is part of ART. We've played at Once a bunch. We did a residency at City Winery.
That's right. Didn't Allie McGurk play with you there?
And Allie we're about to embark on a couple of week tour.
With Allie?
With Allie.
Oh, great.
Oh, wow.
She's kind of in the band almost at this point. Yeah.
I grew up with her dad.
Yeah, yeah.
You know Joe?
Oh, very well.
Yeah. So Joe went to CCHS, Concord Carlisle High School, with my sister. He's the same year as my sister. So I'd known him since I was 13. Then all of a sudden he got this daughter who's singing like the lights out.
Yeah.
And so we had her on, I don't know, was it a couple years ago?
I was your guest host for that one.
So
he was the very first bartender at Toad.
Didn't he win like Boston Best Bartender or something like that?
Yeah.
And then he was at Highland Kitchen for a while.
But what's really funny about this story, I booked a Tuesday night series at the Lizard Lounge, and it was with 2 acts, and one of them was Allie.
Okay.
And I just booked them. I knew nothing. And I bump into Joe, I don't know, maybe a year later. And he's like, thank you so much for booking my daughter. And I'm like, who's your daughter? And he goes, Allie McGurk. I'm like, what? That's your daughter?
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. It's crazy.
Nuts.
Yeah, she's talented.
She's really great.
So she plays in a different style. It was more of a Motown kind of style for her, whereas with Session Americana, you're playing more Americana. Is it weird to context switch as a drummer to go from one style to another, or is it more immediate? No.
Having done a lot of different styles over the years, it doesn't feel that weird. I think it was a little weird for Allie in the beginning. We were trying to ruin her with folk music and doing a fairly terrible job of it.
That's good for her.
But she's so powerful by herself. And we try to take a real minimal approach when we back her up. And I think it works really well.
At this point, do you still have to practice, or is it just all in here now?
Mostly in there, but I still have to practice, especially if it's, somebody calls me for a one-off gig and it feels like I really need to work on stuff to do that. But sure. But I play with Dennis Brennan Band every week.
Yeah.
And he covers a pretty wide range of Motown, R&B, country, Americana.
I can't claim to be clairvoyant. I'm always the last to know. I ain't got no crystal ball. I keep hearing I told you so.
like when I met you, babe, and my friends started warning me. You'd be ringing my bell, I better run like hell. I chose to disagree. I was.
It's funny that you bring him up because I saw him crossing the street. And I've never met him before, but I just see his face everywhere. And it kind of got me thinking, there's 2 degrees of separation in Boston.
Yes.
Between Chris Delmhorst, who we've talked to, Jennifer Kimball, isn't she married to Rye?
Rye.
And I'm looking at all the people that you play with. Zach, we haven't had on.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who plays for everybody, too.
He does.
Dietrich Strauss,
yep.
Dinty Child.
Yep.
I mean, all these people I've either seen or heard in one way, shape, or form. The community of that type of music, anyways, is really strong.
It is.
And it's really kind of got its tentacles in a lot of different places. I mean, just Eileen McGurk coming into this in with you, which means she's not the Americana. She's the R&B kind of thing, right?
Right.
So I love how that's kind of happened in Boston.
I do, too.
Is it new? Or is it something that's kind of evolved in the last couple of years, or what? Because you've been in the Boston scene for how long now?
I moved here in 1979.
Okay.
I think it's phenomenal. I'd be hard-pressed to say whether I think it's bigger or wider.
Yeah.
It's more communal than I remember it being.
Oh,
you know,
good.
When I came up through the music scene, to play in a bunch of different bands was like sleeping with somebody's wife or something. It was like you just didn't do it. That culture has all broken down. So
everybody's
now,
in at
so
least
many,
two bands.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And it's all crisscrossed. And I think that begins to impact genres as well. I'd be hard-pressed to call Lake Street Dive an Americana band, but yet they are all in that scene.
Yeah.
They're more like a Motown band to me.
Yeah.
And I think it's the same with Allie. She can jump that bridge there.
I feel very proud of Boston when I go see, and I see all these different people.
Yeah.
When Rose Polanzani did the...
Sub Rosa.
Sub Rosa.
Yeah.
And everyone just kind of plays each other's... Were you there?
I've been almost everyone. I've met and missed two.
I think I missed the one that you missed the one that I saw,
yeah.
I think. It was one of the... They hadn't done it in a while.
If it was at Passim...
It wasn't at Passim.
Okay,
it was at Lizard, yeah.
Yeah.
But anyways... It was great. I love to see all those people working together and helping each other in their own songs. And
right. So we had all played in various bands together over the years. Mm-hmm. Session did a record with Rose at one point. One of my favorite records, actually, that we did.
She was my co-host for Chris Delmhorst.
Oh, yeah.
She's great. Fantastic. Yeah.
They're both great. I had a band cancel for a Tuesday night really late in the game. It was like a Saturday or something for the coming Tuesday. And I just put out like an APB email to all my friends. Anybody want to take this night?
Yeah.
Rose Polanzani writes back and says, Rose Cousins is in town.
Oh, yeah.
We'll just do the Roses, like the Rose Festival or something like that. We'll just invite everybody we know.
Yeah.
So we all went down and played, and I loved it so much. It was so spontaneous and featured incredible singers and harmonies kind of off the cuff. I went back home, and I sat back, and I'm thinking, how can we do this again? What could we call it? I'm like secret, like hidden Rose, and all of a sudden up pops Sub Rosa. And I'm like, that's the name. So I write to Rose. I'm like, we're going to do Sub Rosa, the secret society of Rose Polanzani with friends and strangers. So that was the title.
It's so great.
And when we started to book, I said, you book all the musicians and I'll book the stranger. I'll book one person.
That's right.
Hopefully you don't know.
That's right. That's
yeah.
Right.
So she, interestingly enough, is just starting again in April. I wanted to do it again, but I didn't want it to be that big.
Yeah.
Like 15 musician seemed unwieldy.
That's a lot. That's
so I said, let's call it Sub Rosette. And you pick 8 or 9 musicians that will play.
That's reasonable. Because then everyone can do one or two songs of their own.
But it's like me and Zach is the rhythm section. It's Chris Delmhorst, mm-hmm. Dana Colley from Morphe.
Dana's great. Yeah, we've talked to Vapors.
Yeah. It'll be an interesting combination.
Is that
going to
be at Lizard or where?
Yeah, at Lizard.
Okay,
yeah,
great.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, cool.
This is like the Kevin Bacon game, but with Boston musicians. It's kind of cool.
It is. Actually, yeah. Ron, my usual co-host, he said, is there like a 6 degrees of gray beard? It's not six. It's
well,
like,
when you live this
like
long.
It's 2 degrees. Yeah.
Right, so there was a fellow in Face to Face who later went on to another band with someone from Morphine, right? So didn't Sargent go into something called the Twine Men or something like that? With someone from Morphine. So
that's also an interesting road.
That was pre-Morphine. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so when Face to Face was sort of happening, there was a band called Treat or Right at the same time. And that was Jim Fitting and Mark Zandman and Dave Champagne and Billy Conway. We got to be close with those guys. And then when Morphine started... originally with Jerome Dupree, who was the first drummer.
He's my
Jerome
neighbor.
Jerome left, and then Mark called me and asked if I wanted to do it, because he and I were in a band called Supergroup.
Okay.
And it was me, Mark and Chris Ballew from Presidents of the United States of America.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow.
And we used to play at the Plow, and we would go down at 4 o'clock, pour a pint, and we'd sit there, and Mark would go, let's write the set list. And we would just make up names, and that would be what we were going to do that night. We would just have song titles, and then we would go home, and we would come back, and we had nothing planned. There was no song.
Holy moly.
And we would just start to play like a groove. And both of those guys were so good. It was almost like freestyle rap.
Wow.
Of like inventing lyrics that went with that song title at the same time.
That's really cool. I've never
no
heard this.
Way.
It was amazing. And we did a bunch of gigs at the Plow. We did a bunch of gigs at Green Street. That eventually led to sort of Mark putting this out there. And I just had, my daughter was like, I don't know, 3 weeks old or something.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I think Billy Conway was definitely waiting in the wings. And he and I have been super close friends forever.
He's out in Montana or something.
So he with Lori Sargent.
Oh, really?
They're a couple. They've been a couple for 20 some odd years.
Yeah.
So they're in Montana. And Lori, after Mark passed away, started Twine Men, which was sort of a variation of that
theme. I thought Twine Men was before, but I guess not. No, wasn't it like a cartoon or something that
he had done was the Twine Men, but that's where they got the idea.
Okay.
So many questions about this. I have a list of them.
Oh boy.
But before that, there was Face to Face.
There was.
So
oh boy.
No. Now if you don't want to talk about it, it's okay. But I watched the video for 1098. And
yes.
I watched it and I brought my wife over. My wife said, oh, I totally know that song.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm watching this video. It's absolutely amazing. The hairstyles and the clothing and everything is absolutely of a particular time
True.
And place. If you watch this now, like,
yeah.
what is your take on it?
I'm mortified.
Mortified. See, I mean, I'm from that era. I mean, that was,
yeah.
you know, when I grew up. And I just get so nostalgic about it. But
yeah.
maybe you, I guess your take on it is different.
It is a little bit. I can be nostalgic about the band at times in different eras. That was a particularly stressful time for all of us. The amazing thing about that video, both of my daughters are really into photography, but the eldest one just asked about that video. Because it's all black and white, and then there's just like one thing in color.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Lori's lips are red, or there's a green scarf.
Yeah.
Angela's got a green scarf. We were all made up, like black and white makeup. Everything was painted or made up or construction paper to look black and white, and it was shot in color.
Oh,
interesting.
No
so there
way.
Was no, they didn't tint anything. It was
oh.
like that was real. And it was like, if you go back and look at it, it's kind of unbelievable on how they did it.
I'm fascinated by this music, right? Because when you just listen to the music by itself, there's a lot of synthesizers and electronic
yep.
drums and things of that nature, and it sounds very clean. But yet when you watch these videos, there's like a gritty aspect to them, right? You know, it's usually a dystopian scene and people are talking on payphones and it's like everything is like very weird.
I think probably that era was too tied up in other stuff that was going on with the band at the time. We were excited for sure, and we were certainly young and hungry. The song did well and the video did well, but it's hard for me to look back on that, I think.
Well, so when was that? 79, you said?
That would have been 82 or 84.
Yeah.
Face to Face was sort of a much maligned band. We did not go over well with the critics.
Really?
We had a huge fan base. We were playing sort of mainstream-ish, new wavy dance rock, and the punk thing was just about to happen. You know,
yeah,
it's like,
yeah.
you know, you have Mission of Burma at the same time that Face to Face is playing.
Huh.
And like, we were like the Antichrist. It was uncomfortable.
When you were playing this new wave music, you know, shortly thereafter the grunge thing started and all that, was
exactly.
there a was there a temptation to move in that direction or no?
No. We were a rock band. And we had gone to Los Angeles. We had gotten a record deal, and Jimmy Iovine was the producer of our first record. The minute we got to L.A., we got involved in a movie called Streets of Fire that was being directed by Walter Hill, produced by Joel Silver, and it had Rick Moranis and Willem Dafoe and Diane Lane. And it was this sort
Rick
of...
Rick Moranis and Willem Dafoe?
Yeah.
Those are not two people I would imagine in the same movie.
Yeah, well, it was billed as a, he called it a rock and roll fable. It was sort of a boyfriend, girlfriend, he comes back from war, she gets kidnapped by a gang, and he has to go save her.
Okay.
And the lead guy is named Michael Paré, and the...
Oh, I remember Michael Paré.
The bad guys were Willem Dafoe, and his right-hand man was Lee Ving.
So what was your role?
Diane Lane was the lead singer of this band called Ellen Aim and the Attackers, and we were her band. We were really wrapped up in that for a long time. It had its good sides and it had its really
bad
sides.
And the movie
sides.
Was released and it was...
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's become like a cult thing now.
Streets of Fire is
Streets
called.
Of Fire.
All right, I gotta go find this.
When we got to L.A. and started to get involved in the movie, you know, Jimmy, his whole career, it's all been about the hit song. That's what he wants, right? Yeah. So we wound up going back to New York and working with a friend of ours who we had met way in the beginning named Arthur Baker, who's a big dance producer. And he produced 10-9-8 and Under the Gun. And those were the two hits. But the rest of the record is really kind of a rock band, playing, I think, pretty well at the time. And it's funny that those two songs were the takeaways, and they were so not what we really did. So it was really frustrating for me in particular, that first record. That's why I'm saying it was kind of torn, how I felt about it. The next record was sort of more rock. And then we played a show, and Lori came in with a song, and she played this intro to this song. I'm like, that reminds me of something. And I can't for the life of me think what that is. And I wound up walking into Cheapo Records in Central Square and talked to one of the guys. And I said, what did Hank Williams listen to before Hank Williams? And he's like, gospel music? And I go, no, no. And he's like, Appalachian music, like hillbilly music? And I'm like, yeah, what's that? So he handed me these records, Blue Sky Boys, Leuven Brothers. And this is like 1986.
Yeah.
I just played those records to death and had my mind blown. And then that set us on this path, sort of moving towards country. That's where the last face-to-face record, Anton Fear produced it. It was called One Big Day. And we were sort of heading in that direction. So the two principal songwriters in that band were Laurie Sargent and Angelo Petraglia, who was my best friend from college. Ange and I have been best friends since I was 17. In 1989, the band breaks up. Angelo moves to Nashville, writes a couple of hit songs, calls me up one day, says, I found a singer. I think you're the perfect drummer for her. You got to come down here. Her name is Kim Ritchie. So I went down and started to play with Kim. Angelo eventually, after all these years, winds up producing and writing all the music with Kings of Leon.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he produced those two huge hits, the Sex on Fire and Need Somebody. All of that shift was based on those records.
So you mentioned Kim Ritchie, and then you also have played with Patty Griffin.
Yeah.
With Patty Griffin, you recorded an album in 2000 that was released 13 years later. Is this correct?
That's correct.
What happened there?
Jimmy Iovine, again. It was kind of an amazing thing for me. So after the Kim thing ended, I spent a lot of time in Nashville. And in between Face to Face and Kim Ritchie, Angelo and I started a band in Boston called The Immortals. And it was like the Doors meet Graham Parsons. It was sort of psychedelic rock mixed with kind of hardcore country. That's the material that Ange took to Nashville with him when he moved there. Patty used to come see us all the time. She was a huge fan. The bass player in that band eventually wound up in her band. And he called me and said, I think the drum chair is open and I think that should be you. After the Kim thing ended, I went and played with Patty. And we were on the road for a long while. And we made that record. And I remember finishing the record. We made it in New Orleans at Kingsway, which was Daniel Lanois's house. And we were there for like 3 months. We finished this record. The A&R person, she was signed to A&M. It was a woman. She came in and listened to it. And I remember our tour manager coming up to us. He goes, get ready, guys. We're going to be on the road for a long time.
Really?
This record is freaking amazing.
Good morning, little guy. See, you've come for me again. The news lives between your teeth. You are not my friend. Pouring little cups of tea, humming a little tune. You sit across from me and fill my little room.
And within like a month, Iveen was like, not releasing it. There's no hit singles. I think Patty needs to go to Sweden to work with these guys that just worked with Britney Spears and craft some hit songs and all that stuff. And I'm like, not again. It ended that.
And this was after it had been recorded. So this is Silver Bell. It's Silver been Bell. Recorded, and they say there are no hits on this?
No hits. Didn't want to release it. Thought Patty could be Christina Aguilera, Britney Spears thing. So they held the record, and Patty immediately went back to Nashville and made a record called 1,000 Kisses, which is beautiful, but sort of it was away from the rock thing and back to her folk thing. There were no drums on that record. Huh. So she toured with that. The bass player and I just kind of went back to what we were doing before. And
so how did it get out in 2013?
I think there was a lot of bootlegs of that record floating around for a long time. And I think Patty and her management finally negotiated some sort of deal to get some of it back. She had Glyn Johns remix the whole thing and put it out. And I think it sounds great. I was excited about
There's some interesting stuff on there. I was listening to one song on there called Little God.
I mean,
there's a really, really interesting sonic textures and other things going on. And it's the drum sound in there sound kind of Peter Gabriel when he started moving away from sort of traditional drum sounds and moving into more sort of textured, nuanced things.
Right.
Is that,
So what was going on there was the intro to that song are bagpipes, which were playing across the street from us. We had the houses on Esplanade, right on the edge of the French Quarter and the Bywater. The bass player comes running in one evening and he goes, there are these bagpipes. But like, let's grab something we can record this with. So we ran outside and just like literally handheld on the street and recorded
Some dude just playing the bagpipes?
And we got that. And then Jay Joyce is a master of loops and effects, and he was producing. So he sort of started the song in with that. And then the acoustic drums, I was up on like the third floor as an overdub, and it was all to sort of drum machine loop thing. And then the drums kick in after the first chorus, I think, top of the second
like
verse.
Like Jack and Diane.
Yeah,
like that was a drum machine. Yep. And then they said, God, this doesn't sound quite right. And they brought the drummer in and he brought it home with that huge drum fill at the end that everybody.
But I love doing that. I love playing along with that kind of stuff. It's like super fun. I love that song.
Your story about the album going away for 13 years reminds me, we talked to Bonnie Hayes.
Yeah.
She did an entire album that never got released.
Yeah.
And now she's just like,
it's not as uncommon as you might think.
I would imagine, just as an artist, it must be incredibly frustrating to put all that work in, and then you have no say in whether or not it's just shelved.
Yeah, exactly.
That's got to be really frustrating.
Yeah, and the timing was weird because we were asked to be the opening act for the Dixie Chicks when they were sort of at their peak, and we were on the road with them playing arenas. They named the whole tour the Fly Tour after Patty's song, Let Him Fly. So they really wanted her, and Patty really wanted us. So when we worked out a deal, we were out there for 9 months, maybe a year, just doing that. And then we took a break and recorded this record. And then we came back and joined up with that tour again. And we're playing the record for them. And they were like, this is amazing. So they went on and covered at least one, if not two, of the songs from Silver Bell.
Huh.
The Chicks recorded later. Yeah.
So when is your memoir coming out? This is a lot of experience.
There's a lot of water under that bridge.
Well, you said you got to Boston in 79?
Yeah.
Is that correct? So it's the 40th anniversary of the Rock and Roll Rumble, which started in 79.
Yeah.
Did you have any involvement in that in the early days?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Not other than playing it, just played it. I think I did it at least twice, if not three times. I think Face to Face did one, and I know I did one with the Immortals.
We're going to do a whole piece on the history of it. We're going to talk to David Bieber.
Yeah.
Have you been to his warehouse?
No.
It's amazing.
I've heard about
it. I bet there's
a
bunch of tapes of Face to Face there.
Yeah.
He's got boxes and tapes and books and magazines, you name it. It's unbelievable.
There's a photograph of Face to Face signing a record deal, and David Bieber's with us.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the whole record.
Well, he had the fro at the time.
Yeah.
Anyways, so it's the 40th anniversary of that, so we'll be going to that on Thursday.
Yeah,
so
quite a history.
Yeah, it is.
And it sort of tracks the history of radio at the same time.
It really does, because it started at BCN, right?
Yeah.
You've done so many things. What do you want to do that you haven't done yet?
That's a good question. I'd really like to make my own record. I've been kicking around an idea for that.
So do you step out from behind the kit? Do you play?
I can.
You can.
What's your other primary instrument?
Guitar, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not great, but enough. It's more of an arrangement thing. I love collaborating with other people, and it's the reason I love playing in sessions so much.
Yeah.
Because it's great fun, but it's really talented people all in the same room.
Well, you know what Jennifer Kimball said, what she did for her, it was a surprise. Everyone showed up. They brought her for her birthday into the studio.
Oh, yeah, I got her, yeah.
And were you in the room?
No, no. Oh, okay. She used... it was all the guys from Cuddle Magic, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And they kind of surprised her, said, we're here to record your album.
Yeah.
And which is fantastic. I love that. I think that's great. That's what they should do for you.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be fun.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, you're surrounded by all these people.
That's one thing.
Yeah. That's one thing.
I would love to seed an album in the sense of coming up with a bunch of rhythmic patterns and then bring it to other melodic musicians to say, you know, what can you do with this? Because I think
that's kind of what I had in mind. Not quite that way, but I was talking to Duke Levine about this, of like creating instrumental music. It would be based on sort of like 40s big band form, where a lot of times the band came out and they would play for quite a while before any vocals came in.
Hmm.
And then the vocals would come in and it would be sort of a short, you know, verse chorus done. And then the band would take it out again instrumentally. So it's like maybe creating a bed of music and giving it to all these various people that I've been so lucky to work with and say, would you write something in this section?
Right. It makes sense because a lot of people who write music, they either play the piano or they play the guitar.
Right.
And, and sometimes the rhythm is an afterthought,
right?
And to be able to have that as part of the beginning of the process.
Right.
Well, actually, as a songwriter, and we've talked about this before, I jones for a different rhythm. And we joke all the time about me. Every song I wrote was in 6/8.
Right.
It was just where my mind was. But I would always want the drummer to give me a different rhythm, get me out of my head,
And get out of your rut, right?
And that's funny. That's the supergroup thing that I talked about earlier was probably the most musically terrifying thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah.
And Mark would just turn around and goes, Billy, give me the beat of the week. Like, just play something. And I would just play a groove, and those guys would start playing along, and something would happen.
I love that.
Did you ever throw them some 7/8 or something like that just to see if they could keep
it up? Was more likely they would throw it at me. When I have to adjust on the fly.
So is this something that you want to work on soon?
Yeah, I mean, I've had the idea for a while, and I haven't really started putting anything together, but it would be a fun project for sure.
It's something that I've always wanted to do is put out an album, my own album too.
Yep.
My other band, the Butler Frogs,
yep.
Who you wouldn't allow play at Toad.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Jeez. I should have expected it. The ambush.
Just kidding.
Man.
Well, they're called the Butler Frogs playing a Toad. I mean, it's a perfect matchup. I'm just kidding. So another thing I wanted to talk about, a lot of things, like, especially for a musician and like a working musician, a lot of it's just about keep on keeping on. Mm-hmm. Just keep on doing things. And a lot of things, you said your daughter's 14, 15?
15, yeah.
So, you know, I have a 17-year-old and I have a 14-year-old. And I always tell them, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as you do something.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah. I've told both daughters that since the day they were born. They would listen to me. They can be gardeners. They can be basket weavers. I think whatever it is that they want to do. Because in the end of the day, right, it's like the difference between a vocation and an avocation is you're doing something that you enjoy doing all day long. And there's been, I think, with the connectedness of the world, you see so many success stories of people doing things that you would normally have considered like not possible. I mean, I grew up in an era when I was lucky that I had parents that were really supportive of music and art. I was going to be a painter. I got my BFA in oil painting, University of New Hampshire. But I grew up just right outside of New York and was bitten hard by the ski bug when I was about 12. That just led me north. So that's where I wound up in New Hampshire and then Boston. But was lucky because the art department at UNH back in those days was phenomenal. And I felt really lucky to be a part of it. Yeah.
Do you still paint?
Great. Not so much, no. I still think about it a lot.
Yeah? As long as you do something.
Yeah. It's dark in there. If you really go in, it's not collaborative and it's a lonely, dark experience.
Well, I mean, if you had told anybody I was going to work for Merrill Lynch, they'd say you were high.
Right.
Speaking of high, there's an awesome song that you guys do called... What's it called?
Tim's Got Weed.
Tim Got Weed?
Yeah.
I love that. I was listening to the song before I saw the title of it. Because he's saying what I think he's saying, and then I looked. I'm like, yeah, that's a great song. I like that song a lot.
We have been joking for years about putting out an album of just dressing room songs, like just shit we made up in the dressing room at the time. That's one of them.
Those make the best stories.
Yeah.
But anyways, and then a couple years later, this is what I do now. I'm a podcaster. Yeah. Who the hell knows what you're going to do?
No.
And as long as you do something, I just think
I think it's good advice.
Is the City Winery...
That's done.
That's done. Yeah. Are you going to do something like that again?
There's no residency thing in line. We've got this two-week fairly regional tour coming up with Allie. Then we've got a Midwestern run in the beginning of May.
Are you doing any festivals?
We're doing a Green River Festival.
Okay, cool.
And then we go back to Europe for 4 weeks in October.
Really? Where are you hitting?
We're hitting Ireland, Belgium, and the Netherlands. Third week is Italy, and then the Czech Republic.
Do you have time to teach, or are you so busy touring and you can't teach?
I think between the booking and the touring.
You're still booking Toad, right?
I am, and Lizard. Yeah, okay. Both, yeah, since day one, I might add. So Toad opened in 93.
I love Toad.
And Lizard opened in 95, and I booked both. I was kind of out of the picture in 95 because that's when I went with Kim Ritchie. So a good friend of mine named Jackson Cannon, who is now bartender extraordinaire. He has Hawthorne and restaurateur. He actually took over booking for a little while I was away.
Okay.
And then when I came back, I took back over and he went into fine foods and dining.
Oh, really?
And I've been doing it ever since. And it's been amazing. A blessing in the way that I'd least expected of being involved in music and seeing bands out of the blue. And there's been a bunch of them over the years, but I suppose the most recent would have been Lake Street Dive, like just subbing for Miss Tess one night at Toad on a Sunday night, you know, and I was like, what
is the formula for you when you're receiving these emails from schmucks like me?
I don't know that there's necessarily a formula. It always helps if it comes through somebody I know or somebody that sure. knows you, or there's some sort of metric where I can get a sense of not only the style of music, but if there's any draw at all,
sure.
what I can expect.
Yeah, that's the hard part, right?
It's really hard.
Yeah. Is it a different vibe for, I mean, Toad is certainly a smaller stage.
Yeah. This one's a lot more pressure for sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a hard ticket and it's like, you know.
So what's the difference in seats?
It's 100. Capacity? Roughly in Lizard, and Toad is 62.
My three of my favorite places are Lizard, Toad, and I love the Sinclair too.
Yeah, man, Sinclair's great.
Yeah, you guys gonna play there anytime?
We talked about that. It's hard for us being seated, being high,
Being higher.
Stage,
yeah,
you know?
It's not the same.
It's not exactly the same. We've been doing a bunch of stand-up shows as of late, especially with Allie in the band. We've done a few.
Yeah,
so that could be cool, but I think in the end, it's probably a little bit big.
When do you hit Europe?
Not till October, but this run that we're doing is sort of here, New Hampshire, New York City, upstate New York, Western Mass.
Okay, so you'll stay kind of local,
ish. Yeah, ish.
You hit Rockwood Music Hall there?
No, we're doing Barbez on Park Slope.
Barbez.
It is like our favorite bar in the world.
And I used to live in Park Slope. Amazing, where is
it? It's on 9th and 9th.
Oh, okay. A little farther up near the park.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just a little back room, and this crazy guy, Olivier Conan, books it, and it's they do a lot of worldy kind of stuff, but it's tiny. It's the music room's like 40 people.
Really?
And it just gets packed. But it's like this deep connection to music and to people that love music. So it's like an old dive bar in front, and then you go through this little curtain into the back room and play back there.
What's it called again?
Barbez.
Barbez.
This is at 9th and 9th in New York?
In Brooklyn.
Okay, yeah. Got it.
Out of curiosity, we have someone coming on. Her name is Zoe Keating. Mm-hmm. You know Zoe?
I don't.
Okay, she's like a cellist, and she does loops with the cello.
Yeah.
She's very close with Amanda Palmer.
Oh, yeah.
She just moved up to Burlington. That's where she lives now.
Amanda's another one that just sort of a touch point recently. So I booked the first residency of the Dresden Dolls.
Yeah.
Was at the Lizard Lounge.
Oh, okay.
It was on like a series of Tuesday nights. Fast forward however many years.
Yeah.
I was in the lounge on an afternoon, Wednesday afternoon. I'm setting up my drum kit. It's probably 3 or 4 o'clock. And these two people come down the stairs, and I'm looking across. I'm like, Amanda? And she's like, Billy. I'm like, what are you doing here? And she was with her husband, with Neil Gaiman.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, and I'm like, she goes, I'm taking him on a tour to show him where it all started.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, because she grew up in Lexington, right?
Yeah. I remember seeing her as the bride in Harvard Square.
She was the statue. Yeah, did you read her book?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great book, The Art of Asking.
She
did a TED Talk that's like millions of people have seen it, talking about artists asking to be paid for their work and the value of that. It's a great book. I'll lend it to you, as long as you don't keep the other book like I gave you for.
I think I gave it back, didn't
you? You did give me that
back.
Yes.
A couple years later.
I have one more shameless plug.
Can
I squeeze
it? Plug away.
So We just finished recording Session Americana did. We're putting out an album produced by Chris Delmhorst, and it's called Northeast. And it's a collective.
Produced by Chris?
Yes.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's a bunch of singers that we invited in to choose an artist that has some connection to the Northeast. Mm-hmm. They don't have to be born here, but have some recognition with it. It is an insane range of stuff.
Really?
Wow. So John Pohida doing a Donna Summer song.
Really?
Yeah. I'm doing a Tom Rush song, Rise covering like a Carly Simon tune. So it's a really interesting group of songs and musicians and players. And we did it at Q Division over the course of a couple of weeks, and I think it's going to be awesome.
That's awesome. When is it coming out?
Don't have an exact date right now, but I would say in the next few months.
That's great, because Chris did that Cars cover album.
Yeah, I played on that. Yeah,
oh, yeah? So that's a great thing for her to produce, because it's kind of the same, you know, you had to pick and choose whatever you guys wanted to do.
Yeah, well, I like, we call it a song shepherd. When you have so many writers in the same band,
yeah,
you really need somebody to come along and say, this needs work, or we should shelve that, or, do, you know,
yeah,
you need that outside voice.
Yeah.
It's very helpful.
And she's a talent, so that's
good.
Yeah,
she really is.
Well, Billy, thank you very much.
Thank you
for
having
me. This is great.
Me.
I can't wait to come see Sub Rosa. We'll have to go.
Yeah, please do.
I'm in.
And then we'll get that album to come
out. Yeah, sounds great.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
I'm on the road to paradise. I think I know the way. Pack my bags this morning. Said my goodbyes yesterday. My friends, they wish me well, though all said I'd return. For the paradise that I seek, it's just a hell where I will burn. Smile and I turn away. Hail the curse. I said to my journey on the road to kingdom come. Highways well traveled, deeply rutted and scarred, littered with the dreams and thorns of those who went too far. So I'll keep you in kind. I ain't gonna be home again for a mighty long time. A mighty long time. A mighty long time.
So keep me close, and I'll keep you in kind. And I ain't gonna be home again for a mighty long time. A mighty long time. A mighty long time.
Billy may not know it yet, but he is my new best friend. He is truly a fantastic person and drummer, and we really enjoyed our conversation. You can see where he and Session Americana are playing next at sessionamericana.com. A special thanks to Jonathan Beakley for joining us as well. If you have not been there, you should definitely go to Toad and the Lizard Lounge and check out their schedules. Toad is at toadcambridge.com, and Lizard Lounge is at lizardloungeclub.com. All these links, including links to many of the people he plays with, can be found at AboveTheBasement.com, where you can join us on Patreon, sign up for our newsletter, listen and subscribe to our podcast, like our Facebook page, follow us on Twitter, and look at all the nice pictures we post on Instagram. We are everywhere. On behalf of Jonathan, Ronnie, and myself, thanks for listening. Tell your friends, and remember, Boston music, like its history, is unique. Hey, it is Chuck again. We would like to take a quick second to appeal to you to subscribe to this podcast, Above the Basement. There are many good reasons to subscribe, but I'll tell you just two of them. You never have to check to see if we have new episodes, as they are automatically listed on your podcast app, and it doesn't cost you anything. Just go to AboveTheBasement.com/subscribe, where we have links to all the major podcast apps, including iTunes, Stitcher, Radio Public, and more. There are instructions there on how to subscribe, or you can just click on one of the subscribe buttons. If you already have a podcast app on your phone, for the most part, you can just open the app and you will see a magnifying glass there on the interface. Just tap on that and type Above the Basement. You should see us there right at the top. Tap on the subscribe button and you are done. And while you were there, please write us a nice review. Subscribes and reviews in the podcast universe are an important piece to reaching more listeners, so please take 15 to 20 seconds and help spread the word about ATB. Thank you for your support.